Howdy, it's Truth About Markets time on Resonance 104.4 here in Blighty.
This is the Truth About Markets, yes, on Resonance 104.4 FM. So, Max Kaiser, hey, I know that Resonance FM has been reaching out to you on Twitter asking you to come in and do a live show, but have they ever DM'd you and done the actual communication which will help us find our way to the Resonance studios and do another live extravaganza, a spectacle, a spectacular event?
No, that's the thing about residents. It's all very cloak and dagger, because they're actually working for MI6, aren't they? It's a counterintelligence psyops meant to confuse and befuddle so that the man, the banksters, have a way to create a paradigm shift within the ulterior motives presented by the Queen. And I know this for a fact.
Speaking of the Queen, everybody here in probably listening on Resonance 104.4 FM, of course, the live transmission I'm talking about within the radius of the FM band wave. Those listening online might not know this, but the Queen has received a big bump in her income, mostly because of all the, she owns the freehold to great swathes of London, and the rental income has gone up. Like I think they said something like £900,000 or £700,000 for this past year. So that's good, very good in time for the royal baby.
Well, yeah, speaking of the Queen, it's Gay Pride Day here in Soho. There's a big parade, I believe, and there's a warning or there's a notice that on Peter Street or one of these streets that there's going to be a party of naked men or clothes are optional. Anyway, bring your wellies because the streets are going to be quite slippery, I would say.
Yes, I was looking online for like the events that might be too close to us or something, and we might need earmuffs or something for some because there's some quite a few live musical events. Well, yeah, there was like some sort of party, and it said nudity not required.
Right.
But most people will show up in their underwear or naked, and I was like, what the heck? These guys are trapped back in the 60s and 70s. Like, remember during those times of the ice storm? What's that film about from Connecticut where everybody's doing the swinging and the free love?
That's not an earmuff, that's a merkin. Oh, yeah, the naked people. Well, the 70s, I think, and you had a lot of naked gay men running around, you see, and
Yes,
apparently.
but they're still naked and running around,
Yeah.
apparently. But that you had a lot of naked heteros and just like lawyers and accountants by day, naked and shagging their neighbor at night with their wife.
Yeah, I guess. People like to shtup. That's the thing about people. They're like, except now they got this new three-way test tube baby. Did you see that in here? In the UK, they pioneered the three donors to a test tube baby. I saw the report last night on the news. Now, I'm not exactly sure. Apparently, the technology is if you have a marker for a hereditary disease, if you have a three-way in a test tube, then that is mitigated to somewhat or eliminated. So it's a way to X out algebraically through DNA fusion and some kind of remixing. It's like a remixing. It's like sampling of DNA to create a kind of a newfangled crack baby.
Well, it's also could end up being like genetically modified wheat and stuff like that. You don't know if you're going to create new designer diseases. Who knows what's going to happen when, they're saying that this is a slippery slope. This is the beginning. This is for a specific issue passed down through the female DNA that they're removing this specific problem and inserting another woman's genetic material just for a very small portion of the genetic code. Now, the ethicists and doctors are saying that this could be the beginning of a slippery slope that, you know, where it eventually be like you genetically alter a baby for height, weight, so-called intelligence,
yeah,
eye color, things like that. But also, like the doctor was saying, so this is going to be provided on the NHS, but then next, you know, people with a genetic marker for babies with Down syndrome or things like that, they're going to start saying, well, we want it too. Why should we be subjected to the whim of, you know, life, God, fate, you know, why, you know, but it seems like it's a slippery slope to me, because it just also seems like who knows if you remove those from the genetic code, what new, super new diseases and stuff like that might happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does it affect inheritance rights and property rights? You know, the institution of marriage, the modern institution of marriage, is put in place for keeping track of property rights, because people with wealth wanted to be able to claim that they had hereditary rights to that property. And this is what has kept this whole institution of marriage going for so long. Now, if you have DNA all mixed up in a test tube, who gets what in the event of property needing to be split? So marriage registers the people with the some other institution like the church or the state, and then they keep a record of all that. Here, if they have a record of everyone's DNA, so your DNA is on a computer database somewhere with the NSA and all these other outfits and everyone else's, and so they can do a test and they'll figure out that you're the mix of somebody's DNA, blah, 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 and then they can do a property right. But not as if anyone is entitled to their property anymore anyway, because and the largest growing population in the world is the prison population. And in America, which has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population, this is a growing important aspect to the economic mix of what's happening in the United States, because so much of these prison labor is being farmed out to corporations. Another word for that, of course, would be slavery.
So here's a little bit more on that. The new technique helps women with faulty mitochondria, the energy source in a cell, from passing on to their babies defects that can result in such diseases as muscular dystrophy, epilepsy, heart problems, and mental retardation. About 1 in 200 children is born every year in Britain with a mitochondrial disorder. So this is what they're going to fix in this particular case. But I could see that there was a woman on one of the news programs here arguing that it definitely would not lead to a slippery slope. And no other women with genetic diseases that aren't covered by this will not demand the same for their unborn children.
Mm. Well, you know, science and technology is interesting. But unfortunately, when it gets co-opted by the fascist collusion of state and corporation, it does turn into kind of a Nazi-esque free-for-all. So I'm sure, given the power of the fascism now, we'll see that kind of boys from Brazil scenario. Remember, they were breeding Hitlers. I'm sure they'll try that before anything good comes out of it, and we'll all deal with a kind of a tsunami of Hitlerian totalitarian nightmare.
Well, it is more like that in here, in that it's a state-run healthcare system. So it seems like if you're going to allow this, then at least it should be in the private sector and they should go, you know, pay for it. It just seems a bit, if everybody's going to be doing this, it seems like very expensive if everybody's collectively paying for this.
Speaking of marriage and marriage rights and property rights and DNA threesomes and the test tubes, I saw another interesting kind of story where some futurist is predicting that within 20 years, you'll have marriage rights applied to robots so that robots can get married. And of course, robots have these huge databases, and on the databases would be information about DNA, and synthetic DNA is another technological trend. So you can pop out some synthetic DNA goop, mix it up in a three-way test tube, and create your own robotic baby offspring to carry on the family tradition of hardware and software and spying, I suppose. I mean, of course, marriage rights are evolving. You have gay rights now in America. and around the world. So, you know, the whole idea of, again, institutional marriage is transforming. So robots getting married seems like it's right around the corner. Having a robotic children, and there's a lot of robotic companies in America. iRobot, it's a fairly new company, multi-billion-dollar company. There's a company out there called Smart Machines or Machines, or some kind of machines, another robotic company. So robots are huge business, and a lot of interesting things happening technologically in that space.
Talking about a Brazil-like economy and totalitarian sort of freak system, here's an interesting set of data from Lawrence McDonald. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he's Convert Bond. And U.S. federal government ownership of mortgages, percentage of total. In 1950, it was 4%. By 1970, it was 8%. So then from 1970, of course, in 1971, we went off the gold standard in America, and it was totally unhinged from the rest of the, from having any sort of true wealth creation, or debt could be unlimited, essentially, because there was no true cost, it seemed, to it. And then, of course, we had the Big Bang, the financial deregulation right after that. So from 1970, the government owned 8% of the mortgages. 1990, they owned 30%. 2013, they owned 49%. So they own half of all mortgages in the United States of America, which is remarkable when you think about, here is a government that is supposed to be by and for the people. And you definitely see now this ownership. Basically, the government now owns you. So you are by and for them. You pay them. It's a rentier government. They're lords. They're giving you a property that on their whim that you could live in it. How is that any different from the communist, the Soviet government owning all the property, and therefore you rely totally on being like politically right, correct, so that they didn't drive you out of your home?
Mm-hmm. Well, under the tenant-farmer arrangement, the lord gives you the land. Lends you the land, essentially.
Yeah, you have to rent it.
And then you work the land for the lord, and you keep a few bob at the end of the quarter to buy yourself a pig or something. Here, the lord, in this case, the banking establishment, lends you a bunch of money. And you spend 98% of that money paying off previous debts, and you hope that you might have a couple of bucks left at the end of the quarter to buy a McPig sandwich.
Yeah, but this is even more than that. There's the other half is obviously owned by either the person or the bank. This is owned by the U.S. federal government. So just like the Queen, where her income went up by over £500,000 this year, thanks to what? She owns the freehold on many properties to which nobody else could ever buy. It doesn't matter how much they pay for their so-called mortgage, they're renting it from the Queen, who owns the freehold.
Yes, she raised everyone's rent.
So this is just like that. They've created an aristocratic sort of royal system whereby the government owns the property. There's an illusion. 99 out of 100 Americans will tell you that they have an ownership economy, that they're becoming more and more, they're becoming richer and richer over that whole time. And yet you see for a fact that, in fact, they have not become richer and richer over that time. They've owned less and less equity. They own less and less rights to their own property.
Mm-hmm. And then just like a medieval court, you have your alchemists. So people like Google or Facebook, they're alchemists, essentially. They create, they turn lead into gold by allowing people to voluntarily give all of their personal details into a database, which is then sold on to the NSA and sold back to them in form of a gambling products. And those alchemists do very well. They're very close. And then they have the fools, you know, like a Bill Maher type, who's a, you know, he's a fool for the king. And so it's very medieval. We're back to medieval days. And then you have the gay parade.
So, I mean, the other thing about this situation, so we're now like 2 or 3 weeks into the revelations from Edward Snowden regarding the NSA spying on all you Brits here, but also the GCHQ spying, it appears, on, you know, the U.S. citizens on behalf of the NSA. So this is where, this is the same sort of corporate model you see globally. So your water supplies, your water, you know, your utilities here are sold off to foreign entities. And then when they fail to deliver, they say, well, our hands are tied. They're overseas. They're in France or they're in China or they're in Australia. There's nothing we could do about it. So it's a way for them to, you know, offshore their responsibilities across the board and offshore your rights where you can never go contact them. You can never go touch your rights again. So in this situation, all your fiber optic cables, for example, apparently they're essentially go straight through. They pass through GCHQ headquarters first. So every single thing you communicate. Now, a lot of people think they have nothing to hide. They don't mind, I guess, you know, nudity is optional. Mm. They don't mind showing their penises and vaginas and stuff like that to random strangers. But most people, you know, there are a small section of the population that has dignity, that has a sense of self-worth and privacy. And I think if you've ever been spied on, and knowingly, if you ever had your phone hacked, you know it's not the things you might be doing wrong that you're worried about. It's the private conversations with your mother or brother or sister, your lover, your doctor. Those are the things you worry about being listened to. Those are the things that are debilitating because you never share. You don't have the intimacy is removed. And a lot of people, you do know, have no need for intimacy because they've been so removed from it. They've been, you know, they gorge on junk food, they gorge on junk TV, on junk tabloids, and they don't understand the beauty of intimacy.
Mm. Well, I've been thinking about this privacy issue and don't worry if you have nothing to hide response. And the fact is that it's not about privacy as such. It's not about whether or not you have something to hide. That's completely not the issue at stake here. The issue at stake here is another human right or a civil right as guaranteed by documents like the Constitution of the United States, and that is the right to assemble. Mm. It's the right to assemble. It's not about a privacy issue. It's about making sure there's not any opposition. There's no opposition. You know, typically whenever a dictator comes into office, they outlaw people gathering in groups of more than two. Mm-hmm. Because if you see a group of more than two, they might be plotting to overthrow the king. So they take away that right. And in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights and these other types of documents, there's always a clause in there and called you have the right to assemble. You have the right to gather in a place and discuss things, including opposing the whoever is in power. You know, in Britain they have the who's in government and then you have who's in opposition. Now, under this new system of pervasive spying, they would not have any opposition at all, even though the opposition here in the UK, it's a bit of a pantomime, and, you know, the Tories and the Labour are very much on the same page, and there is no real opposition as such, but at least they pay lip service to it. In the U.S., they don't even pay lip service to it. There's only the far right and the military prison industrial casino complex. And more, if you look at these activities, like they're arresting people for chalking on the street. They're arresting people for writing Bank of America is no good outside of the Bank of America in chalk. And those people are facing 8 years in jail. So that's not a privacy issue. It's not that they have something to hide, that they're being spied on, that they I've got nothing to hide. That's a misframing of this issue. The issue is you have no right to assemble. You have no right to discuss an opposing view or to challenge the dictator. It's a clear sign of an autocratic dictatorship in place. So in America, without a scintilla of doubt, you have an autocratic dictatorship in place as bad as Pinochet in Chile, They're putting people in prison for no reason, and a lot of these people in Texas, they've killed 500 people. So how many people did Pinochet kill or make disappear? A few thousand? Well, America's eclipsed that number by far so far under this president. So this is the issue at stake. And of course, in any time you have a political split or divide or dictatorship like you do, you have those who collaborate, and you have many collaborators, mostly collaborators, and then you have a few dissenters, whether it's Edward Snowden or an Aaron Swartz or a Kim.com or any people like this who are either in purgatory in an airport snack bar somewhere in Moscow, or they're in the consulate of Ecuador in London, or they're being on, pending trial in New Zealand. These people are all doing what we would want anyone who is opposing evil dictatorships to be doing. But most people are collaborators. And, we lived in Paris for many years, Stacey. We know that the worst insult you can throw at anyone is to call them a collab, which refers to World War II collaboration. This still stings.
Actually, it's collabo. So they call you collabo, and that's worse than the C word here, for sure. That's the worst C word you could call anybody there. And fist fights will ensue if you call somebody that. So, but speaking of that sort of collabo thing, that's the important thing, is because in France, of course, they have a very strict laws about privacy. They the intimacy and privacy and the dignity of a private life are important to them, where they're not important to Americans, apparently, and they don't mind the horror of the airport strip search and the TSA stealing all your stuff. And this is the problem, is it becomes just the corruption and degradation spreads everywhere. And you think you're just doing it for those sort of Muslims that you don't like at first, but then who go to any airport in America? How many Look who they're shaking down. Look who they're feeling up. Look who they're stealing stuff from. It's you. And I don't think, I mean, it's absurd that these people still think that they're it's some sort of patriotic duty. A classic sign of totalitarian economy is they think this is their patriotic duty to be abused and degradation foisted upon them. It's like anything you would see out of North Korea. Maybe not as over the top and absurd, but it's much more subtle and therefore insidious, I think, in a way. So they're saying the top secret rules NSA gave to FISA court to allow NSA to use US data without a warrant. This is from Glenn Greenwald today. So here you have the removal of checks and balances, which is the slippery slope, again, the slippery slope to totalitarianism, as you see. The NSA, we're told over and over, well, FISA courts are going to protect us. Well, it appears that the NSA gave the FISA court rules to allow the NSA to use US data without warrant. So you see what's going on here is there's a cabal at the top of guys with no rules whatsoever. These are like Henry VIII. They are absolute rulers. There's nothing at all to stop them. Not even the Supreme Court, which ruled recently that they can't hear you, if you if this program is secret, so you're not allowed to talk about it. Therefore, you can't know that you've been spied on, which means you can't bring a case to the Supreme Court. So there's no checks and balances whatsoever to this. The last time we saw this in the UK, you guys should have a historical knowledge. It should be in your blood what happens when there are no checks and balances. Apparently, however, beer and wine and the pub takes priority at this point.
Yeah, there's this composer, I think his name was Charles Ives. He's a very innovative composer. I think he wrote a piece which was four marching bands meeting at an intersection. And that's the kind of what reminds me of this current period we live in, because there's at least three major themes that are set to collide in a very cacophonous and odd way. You've got the state, which has become a dictatorship using technology, and they are now become all-encompassing and totalitarian in their ambition. Then you have the global insurrection against banker occupation hitting places like Brazil and Chile now. So that's now in South America. So the global insurrection is in South America. It's in Europe. And it's sporadic. It's in North Africa, and it's spreading around the world. So there's a global insurrection, and then you have global markets that have been financialized over the past 30 years, and are supported by $250 trillion in debt instruments that are reliant entirely on interest rates being near 0%, and now for the first time in 30 years, interest rates are starting to go in price, higher. So these three things, I think, are three major marching bands heading into an intersection, and the results are going to be quite chaotic and interesting.
Well, that's the remarkable thing is, in the past week, most financial commentators have focused on the price of gold falling. But very few of them are actually talking about the historic move in interest rates and bond in the bond markets. There's been a total rupture, which of course PIMCO has been warning about as well for the past few months, like prior to this move, as they were saying PIMCO, the largest bond fund in the world, was warning people that the sucker's set to blow. Mm. And this is the entire fabric of the essence of being British, for example. It's all about speculating on houses. That's the entire economy here. With interest rates rising, there is no speculative bubble. Only maybe on shorting bonds, but certainly not on house prices rising.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of gold, it's what I call price propaganda. So there's a story in gold this past week and this past month that the story is that around the world, people are lining up 1,000 deep at gold shops to buy gold. The demand for gold, it's a global phenomenon. It's never been higher. People around the world are almost stampeding to buy gold while simultaneously the price is lower. It's not because the laws of supply and demand have been overruled in some magical parallel universe. It's because the paper price of gold, which is leveraged 500 to 1, is being forced down by the same people who brought you the LIBOR scandal and the Forex scandal and the energy market rigging scandal. It's a rigged market. And that's the story. But the price propaganda is the media outlets will say the price of gold is down, and they draw a story on that price without looking at any surrounding influences contributing to the price or in context in any way. They just look at the price because the price triggers an emotion. You know, this is why, getting back to the Hollywood Stock Exchange, it was shut down essentially after I launched it in the mid-90s, is because when you put a price up there, it triggers an emotional reaction. And if you put a price on Mission Impossible Movie Part 3, that's down 5% from the previous day, emotionally, people hate that movie and have a negative thought about the movie, and that is never going to happen in a highly controlled industry like the movie industry, so they had to shut that down. But there is a purpose for this in the gold markets or the stock markets, where a price that's manufactured, and they manufacture price using infinite wash sales, using infinite credit at a 0% interest rate, and they create emotional reactions, not unlike a casino that does the exact same thing to bankrupt people. But anyway, the point is that the gold market, there is a story. It's not the story people are reporting on. I see Zero Hedge has done a follow-up today just talking about what's happening at the COMEX. The COMEX, as far as the inventory it holds in gold and silver, same thing for the London Bullion Markets Association or the vaults of J.P. Morgan, are hitting new all-time lows. The amount of paper short contracts are at new all-time highs. So this is part of this global flashpoint. When COMEX fails, and a lot of people discuss whether or not that's even possible because they can always deliver with paper, but maybe at some point it is possible for COMEX to fail. I think any market potentially could fail. And if COMEX fails, this is going to mark the beginning of a new era.
Well, Warren Buffett, who is one of the greatest investors of all time, everybody acknowledges he's worth $60 billion or so, between 40 and 80. I'll make it very broad because I know people get very specific in the comments. That's not what this is about. It's about, he said that price is what you pay, value is what you get. So the our economies, our Western societies have been very subjective to price propaganda. So that's all they focus on, price. So you hear over and over, you'll hear shrieks and screeches saying that you have lost money. You have lost money because gold was at $1,900 an ounce and now it's $1,200 an ounce. Whereas in the West, they're seeing we are gaining money because I bought 2 ounces this month. Last month, I could only buy 1 ounce. I'm gaining money. So they're looking at it in different ways. The drop in price is causing holders of the ETF in America to dump the ETF and say, oh, we've lost money. Whereas the price drop is causing 10,000 people to march on the local gold shop and try to get more at that price. So they think they're buying greater value. And on top of that, I want to say that they've just announced the what they've been working on for the past year or so in Peru. They found a 1,200-year-old tomb. This is 1,200 years old, and it was unlooted. This is very rare to find an unlooted tomb anywhere in the world. Most were looted over the during the course of the past 1,200 years. But this was dug so deep that nobody managed to find it. And it appears to have been three queens, speaking queens, buried with lots of gold and silver and bronze and things like that. Now, I would hazard a guess that that gold would still fetch as much wealth today on the markets as it had 1,200 years ago. That's still worth as much, it still has as much value as it did 1,200 years ago. We should try an experiment and bury right now in a time capsule an ounce of gold and $1,200 and see if in 1,200 years the people who find it are able to spend either one. Which one they're able to spend in 1,200 years? The $1,200 or the ounce of gold?
Well, the average life of paper money is roughly 50 years. And no paper money, that is money not backed by gold, has ever lasted ever. Every single one has gone to zero. So you figure, like, for example, in 1971, when everyone went on the global fiat money standard, we went back to all money tied to gold, and it was finished. We were back to paper money, and this experiment is since 1970. It's about 40 years old, so it looks like once again we're at a point where the average lifespan. But let me, you know, a good way to think about it is this, and to give your point about price propaganda and perception. If you have, let's say, you know, the art market, it goes up and down just like any other market. Now, if you have a Picasso. And the art market, let's say last year the Picasso went for $50 million. But because the global economy is down, that Picasso is now being sold at auction for $40 million. Now, do you say that people lost money on the Picasso? Or do you say the Picasso looks like it's on sale at a price that's, you know, attractive? Does it bring out the emotion of fear that you lost money on your Picasso, or somebody lost money on the Picasso, or does it bring out the emotion of greed that you can get a Picasso for a lot less money? Now, in the instance of a Picasso in the art world, it brings out that greed factor. Nobody ever says they lost money on their art collection. They lost money on their Picasso. People do not say that. They say that prices are extremely attractive. Prices are attractive. You'll never see a Picasso at this price again because people know that there's no new Picassos are going to be created. the prices are always going up, and that's the perception. Gold, it's the exact same thing. The amount of gold is limited. There's only maybe 2 or 3% of the supplies increased through mining, and then that's shrinking every year due to peak gold mining. And anytime the price is cheaper than it was 6 months ago or a year ago, nobody's losing money. The number of ounces you have in your possession is exactly the same. I have the exact same number of ounces today that I had 6 months ago, except I bought more. So, you know, the Picasso's on your wall. It's not, if the value of the Picasso goes down from the last auction, you look up on your wall and half of the painting isn't missing. They don't take half the painting away.
Well, actually, that's important to me. I think that's wrong because I think the price may have gone down, but did the value of the Picasso go down? Is the value of a Picasso worth less? Is it worth less on all the other measures of aesthetic value, of genius, of artistic value?
The value of the Picasso or the value of an ounce of gold, as reflected occasionally in paper money terms, fluctuates. Yes. But the intrinsic value itself is always the same.
Yeah, the price changes, the value stays constant. That's what I think.
Right, so whether you're Peru 1,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago or Egyptian artifacts from 5,000 years ago or gold mined from the celestial explosion of planet Earth and the sun from 400 million years ago, it's the same value.
Well, exactly, because at the time, the market probably fluctuated there in Peru 1,200 years ago with the Wari people. So those three women may have been buried at the equivalent of $1,900 an ounce or at $1,200 an ounce. And maybe those people were freaking out saying, oh my God, the price is down. And that's why maybe they felt like they could bury them with more gold at the time.
Well, look, I mean, try to spend a Scottish £5 note in London. And people say, I don't take Scottish £5 notes. But it says it's accepted in the United Kingdom. It has some royal person's signature. Like, no, I don't recognize that £5 note, that piece of paper, as legal tender, and I refuse to take it. And this is the problem with all paper money. If people don't want it, don't recognize it as having value, the intrinsic value is zero. Gold and fine art, the intrinsic value is unimpeachable and universally recognized, and has value regardless of what any paper fluctuation might be in any given day. Those who say on the mainstream media that gold is down and people have lost money are just it's just price propaganda, because they want the paper pushers to benefit from this paper rentier situation where they give you all the debt you want. There's no limit to how much indebtedness you can put yourself into. That's great. Now you're in debt, whether it's your student loan, your medical loan, your mortgage loan. Great. Now you're a subject of the crown of debt pushers. Congratulations.
Well, I mean, the propaganda, like I said at the top of the show, you know, with the percentage of how much the U.S. federal government ownership of mortgages, Americans would probably stab or shoot you if you tried to tell them that they had a government-owned mortgage system, that they had this sort of system. They would not, you could show them all the data and stats you wanted, but many of them, most of them, not the sort who are going to be listening to this show, so don't write in the comments that I don't believe it. I know you don't, because you wouldn't be listening to the show. But 99% of your neighbors will think that they are free and rich and getting richer, and they have property and they're property owners, not that they're, you know, a tenant farmer on the government's, you know, property.
Well, look at the student loan situation, for example. The government in this country started to charge people to go to university with a minimal amount of money. They call it a top-up fee. We at the time said this would grow and grow and grow and become a huge number, and that's exactly what it has been. It's become 40 billion pounds now. And so the government is going to bundle up all of those loans. And from a report that was given to them from the Rothschild Bank, they're going to find a buyer, a private equity group or a hedge fund, to buy those loans. They're going to, in the process of making that sale, retroactively increase the interest rate on all those loans from a minimal base rate plus 2 or 3% to a market rate, let's call it 5, 6, 7%. And then once that, and then they'll give it to a new entity, a hedge fund or whomever, who is has unregulated. Hedge funds are not bound by any regulations whatsoever. They deal in the shadow banking system, which is completely invisible to any regulation at all. And most of those funds eventually go bankrupt and require a bailout, which means that that portfolio of student loans will ricochet back to the government again, who will then own all the student loans, except they'll be paying 6 or 7%. And so, once again, the state, the authoritarianism, the dictatorship, the Nazis will own your paper. They'll own your mortgage, they'll own your student debt, they'll own your medical debt, and you'll be working on the medieval tenant farming situation once again. And they pass through these intermediaries like hedge funds who milk the system and get a huge bonus in the meantime to try to create the illusion of a free market. But it's basically goes back to a form of feudalism.
So back to the mortgage market in the US, which is the numbers I recognize because my cousin, who I follow on Facebook, he's been in the process of buying a home, and they've been looking and looking for the past 2 months, and finally they found place, and they were putting in an offer literally the day that rates spiked from like 3.6% to 4.5%. So a huge jump. Suddenly there was $100 more per month added to his bill, his monthly mortgage payment, $1,200 a year, considering that most Americans live paycheck to paycheck, and you're also having the all sorts of inflation. You're having Obamacare expense, all these new expenses coming in, and here's $1,200 a year that he's not going to have to spend, that he's not going to have available to him to spend on other goods and services that make an economy grow. So here it's going to the landlords of this feudal system we've built up, where somehow most participants think they're somehow becoming rich and wealthy and aristocratic in the course of owning this mortgage.
Well, an interesting concept that was introduced this past week called feral hogs. Now, what this means is that up until 15 years ago, you had what were called the bond vigilantes. These were people that would sell bonds if the government started to spend too much money. And the rising interest rates would force the government to reverse course and spend less money. But starting 15 years ago, and these programs of quantitative easing, the government really neutralized any free market actions of bond traders to the for their ability to have any impact on interest rates. So every time there was a threat of rising interest rates, the government would increase their quantitative easing. So in America, they've got $85 billion a month now. The government goes into debt to keep interest rates as cheap as possible to keep this mechanism, transfer mechanism of wealth from the public sector to the private hedge funds and neo-feudal lords, etc. Now, starting a few weeks ago, interest rates started creeping up, as you've been describing. They've been going down for 30 years. They peaked under Reagan and Volcker, and they've been going down for 30 years. So now here's what we're set up for. We bring in Mark Carney for running Bank of England, and you have other central banks in place. Interest rates creep up. Their response will be as they've done in Japan, to hit the market with massive, unprecedented quantitative easing or government buying of debt 10 times, 20 times, 30 times more than they've done so far. Now, what's going to freak people out is that interest rates will continue to go up. And at some point, the market will say there is no amount of printing, even if they did print $100 trillion, as was rumored a couple of years ago. There's no way to keep interest rates from rising. This is really the panic moment when the huge collision of epic forces comes together. And this is, I think, what the rally in gold on Friday, and gold was up $34 an ounce on Friday in a huge rally. Again, not reported, but there it is. I think gold is now just beginning to discount this new reality where there is a breakdown in the central planners to control the COMEX and other gold trading posts and the ability to control bond prices. And there's a setup for a huge short squeeze in gold. I would not be surprised at all, Stacy, if gold ended the year once again in the black. This would be the 13th year in a row gold traded up on the year. I would also not be surprised if this year gold didn't hit a new all-time high. That'd be above $2,000 an ounce. That's how stretched these markets are in terms of being artificially kept cheap with debt that now looks like there's no amount of government interference that's going to keep interest rates from going higher.
Well, the front page of the Telegraph today is a big headline: End of the Thatcher Property Revolution. A generation of young families and rented properties could turn away from the Conservative Party, experts warn tonight after new home ownership figures signaled the end of Margaret Thatcher's housing legacy. So, of course, what she did was take publicly owned properties and hand them to people who are now in their 50s and 60s. I have lots of friends here in their 50s and 60s, and I've known them for 15 years, over 15 years, and several of them I've never seen actually work a day in their life. They just extract equity from this property because, of course, Margaret Thatcher gave them these properties at a huge, way, way, way below the market price. So those people still are, those guys run the British, on the British end, the property market. Of course, we know in London, the other, at least 50% of properties are sold to Chinese, Russian, Saudis. So the Office for National Statistics said the number of 25 to 34-year-olds who own their home has fallen from 2 million to 1.3 million in a decade. Only 40% of young adults own their own home, compared with 58% in 2001. Now, again, going back to Warren Buffett, he said a few years ago, when the property bubble was happening in the U.S. and lots of the boomers were all excited and running around fantasizing about their luxury retirement they were about to have, he said why people love property bubbles he'll never understand, because it's just a wealth redistribution away from the young towards the old, which in any sound economy you would not want to have, because the old are not wealth creators. They're retired, right? By nature, they're just retired. They're not working. So why you would want to take capital away from the young who might deploy it in a way to create wealth or, you know, a better future is a stupid policy to encourage, but encourage it they do. These governments who own 50% of the mortgages in the U.S., Lord knows how much they own here. But George Osborne, of course, has introduced a program similar to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is why the U.S. government owns 50% of mortgages. And they're saying that they found that the average home price now is six times income, which, of course, it should be three times income, right?
Mm. Well, Osborne's Help to Buy scheme, it's a great example of how things are messed up, because the government's going to guarantee 20% of the mortgage. Okay, now the government, if they guaranteed wages, or they doubled minimum wage, then people's income would go higher, and house prices would fall because the demand is not there without the artificial support, which would mean prices would go lower. So within 3 or 4 years, you'd have a situation where people's income would be higher and the price of houses would be lower. So then people will then buy houses with a more normalized rate of toward the income ratio you just mentioned, and the and putting money, equity into the house, and keeping a relatively small mortgage. But instead of allowing prices for housing to go through a normal correction, they're goosing it with a government-guaranteed scheme, but wages are flat to down. So what he's doing is just creating another bubble in housing. The proportion number of people in housing will drop because their wages are falling, and so the average house in the UK keeps going higher and higher, out of reach. The people who are already on the housing, Thatcher's housing boom, are leveraging the assets of their housing and taking advantage of the help to buy scheme to create new loans, to create new houses, to create new tenants, to create new buy-to-let scheme, to create a bigger footprint of their rentier society. So you're helping the 50 to 60 year olds. You're abandoning the 20 to 30 year olds. You're making the bankers rich. And you're impoverishing society. So that's just, and George Osborne, Help to Buy, ticks all the boxes. He helps the blue rinse Tory 80 year old knuckleheads. He alienates everybody else. He's setting himself up for life after number 11 Downing Street, where he can get a nice job at a consultancy. And the entire economy is at risk.
Yeah, but Boris Yeltsin used to drive drunkenly around in towns when he was seeking votes. And he got them by giving away stuff. So this does encourage the people who own the homes on which there's allegedly worth a certain amount. The obviously it's all the baby boomer generation, right? But they've got to sell in order to capture those gains. That's the thing about this in a liquid market. Theoretically,
well, you don't have to sell in that. You can use it as collateral. So that if you have a great relationship with your bank, the rising asset value becomes the collateral to base another loan to buy another property. So by boost, this is when people say that this economy is boosting asset values and not income, that's what they mean. They mean that collateral values, which are tied up in a house or a bond portfolio or a stock portfolio, of course, those stocks and bonds are now experiencing epic rounding tops and crashing, but they're referring to the collateral value that works in terms of creating a bigger loans, and especially if interest rates are kept low, then you're asset rich.
Well, this is 30, 40 years of brainwashing, and it's not going to end overnight, but end it will, because this sort of setup obviously is the greater fool setup. It's a Ponzi scheme, and the fact that for prices to continue to rise in such a manner that the population doesn't need to work, they just need to extract equity. It's obviously you create an economy where no work is created because a significant portion of the voting population doesn't need to work. They just need to extract equity. Then it's set up for failure, because obviously the under 40s, their incomes are declining. The latest numbers from the Office of National Statistics show that wages declined by 1.7% in this first quarter. So you're running like a mouse on one of those wheels faster and faster just to keep ahead. Mm-hmm. But eventually it doesn't matter how much propaganda you foist upon the population. Eventually it'll have to end just through the sheer physics and mathematics of it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, another interesting thing about the collateral and asset values, and if you look at the exchange traded fund GLD, which is the gold proxy, if you have a portfolio and let's say 10 or 20% of that portfolio is in gold as it was sold to you, it's in GLD. If you can manipulate the price of gold down by 30, 40% as they've done recently, that means that the margin value or collateral value of your portfolio is impacted, and you have to either sell out. You're forced to sell essentially, but you're forced to go into things other than gold. So this is another reason why on CNBC you'll see why people they'll be very excited that you own IBM or some technology spying company like Microsoft, but you don't want to own gold. And people will listen to that. They'll see that they have a margin call because GLD is down, and they'll get a call from their broker who'll say, get out of GLD and buy Google and buy Facebook, buy the Stasi and get out of Freedom. And in that panic moment, people do exactly that. They sell their Freedom and they buy the Stasi, and so the Stasi gets rich. And it's all done through CNBC and the big brokerage firms and the telecommunications, which allows for instant bad decisions to be made.
Well, that's we're coming to the end of this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4fm.com. And if you want to hear a special live episode in the upcoming weeks, everybody get on Twitter and tweet to Resonance FM and tell them that you want that they should DM Max Kaiser and arrange for a live broadcast where you are able to call in and actually...
See, I thought they wanted me to do a live show, like a fundraiser with people in the audience. I thought that's what that meant. But...
Well, we'll have to find out. Tell them to DM and and let us know what they want. They left Max hanging, literally, from Blackfriars Bridge. Oh, no. Oh, actually, we didn't even get to that latest Vatican Bank scandal.
Oh.
Okay. So, anyway, tune in next week for more of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Bye, y'all.